will return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mundell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program the assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights, a hockey man familiar to all hockey fans here in Manitoba, Kelly McCrimmon. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Kelly. Obviously, tonight, another one of those milestone nights in the history of the Vegas Golden Knights. You hired a head coach earlier, and tonight you have the draft lottery. Obviously, it's a lottery, so there's only so much of it you can control. But, you know, going into tonight and then after the lottery is complete tonight, it'll be nice to have a little more assurance of where you're going to draft in the first round of the upcoming NHL draft.
Well, what it does is that, all the teams in the lottery are hopeful that it might be their lucky night. But, regardless of the outcome, it gives you clarity as to where you'll be selecting. Our situation this year was a little unique in that we've known all year we would be picking in the top six players, whereas if you're on a team that's playing, you're not sure until the end of the regular season where exactly your pick might be. So we've had that much certainty, and I guess what this will do tonight is let us know exactly what number our first selection is going to be.
Kelly, going back to early March, about 2 months ago, how special was it for you personally to make Reid Duke the first player to ever be signed by the Vegas Golden Knights, former Brandon Wheatking?
Well, it was a nice story, from a personal standpoint, because, of course, I traded for Reid and then coached him in Brandon. We won a championship together, so that made it even more special. And yet Reid's signing was based on his own merits. He's a real good player. Our organization think he has a chance to be an NHL player, and really look forward to working with him here in the future.
Kelly, I was down in Vegas in March, and I had an opportunity to check out the exterior of the arena, and it's spectacular. And it seemed to be that there was a little bit of a buzz from some of the folks in Vegas. What are you hearing from people and fans about this new team that's coming to the desert?
Well, a lot of excitement, to be honest. Ticket sales have been very strong. There's a real high level of interest. You touched on the facility that will be the home arena, and it's a state-of-the-art building that was built for hockey. It's a beautiful arena. I think is going to be one that's a great home rink, and obviously real special for fans.
Kelly McCrimmon is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kelly is the assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights. Kelly, I mentioned sort of the checklist that you go through as you're trying to, create a new NHL franchise from scratch. You checked off a big box earlier this month when you hired Gerard Gallant as your new head coach. What made Gerard so appealing to you and to George McPhee and to the franchise in general as being the man you wanted to make the first coach of the team?
Well, Gerard has a lot of experience. He's, a Jack Adams candidate only a year ago for his work in Florida. He's had great success in Major Junior, winning Memorial Cup with St. John. He was a real important assistant on Michelle Therrien's staff in Montreal. He'd been a head coach in Columbus shortly after retiring as a player. And I think, in the industry, he's very well regarded, not only for his ability as a real good coach, but a guy that players really like to play for. And when we, were working our way through our search and making our decisions, we wanted to have a real established coach in place, because we feel that a lot of our decision making through the early years is going to be on our players and building building the team. So with Gerard in place as our head coach, we know we're getting great leadership and our players are being well coached, and that's what we were after with this hire.
Kelly, how much of your time these days is spent preparing for the expansion draft?
A great deal. Watched a lot of NHL hockey this year, live, obviously, and then also on video. In the second half of the year, I've spent more time on the amateur side, being familiar with who the top players are. But, you know, each of our two drafts upcoming, the expansion draft and then the entry draft, are tremendously important. When you look at our organization, our pro scouting staff is going to be responsible for the expansion draft. Our amateur staff will be responsible for the entry draft. So I think that you know, division of responsibilities allows there to be tremendous focus on both drafts. And then from a management standpoint, for George McPhee and myself, we obviously you know, are involved with on both sides of it.
Kelly, the, you know, Vegas also announced that they're forming a junior Golden Knights teams. And I guess the question for me is, how important is it to kind of establish hockey in the desert as a more significant presence than it may already be right now?
Well, we think it's real important. We're going to have, we're in the process of our practice facility being completed, which is going to be a really great addition to the community. It'll have two ice surfaces. I think it's really going to foster the development of minor hockey. And, you know, when you look at no further back than last year's NHL draft, with Austin Matthews being the first player selected coming from Scottsdale, Arizona, he's a player that his interest in the game stemmed from NHL hockey moving to Phoenix. So that investment, that initiative is very long-term in nature. But it's important to get started on day one and to have that leadership position in the community in terms of the growth of and the interest in minor hockey.
Kelly McCrimmon is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kelly is the assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights. Kelly, you know, the Golden Knights are quote-unquote open for business now, meaning they can make trades and they can, you know, have conversations with other teams in the league ahead of the upcoming expansion draft. How difficult is it to sort of balance a trade opportunity now versus, you know, when you don't yet know the players that are going to be available come June 21st and come the expansion draft? It's sort of a bit of an unknown situation when you're having these conversations, or when George McPhee is having these conversations with his colleague general managers.
Well, the template is that teams are submit their lists, you know, in mid-June with either three defensemen, seven forwards and one goaltender, or eight skaters and one goaltender. So, you know, that's where it's quite possible that we end up with teams. Between now and then, there's the ability to have discussions where, from our standpoint, it would have to make sense for us to make a move rather than see what list is submitted. Our job over the course of the year has been to try to predict and handicap what teams might do with respect to who their core players are, with respect to who in turn our players of interest would be. And obviously it's something that has to make sense for the team involved if there's going to be an agreement struck either in advance or during the window where we have access to all the lists. So that you know, that's I guess what, you know, where agreements come from is, you know, mutual interest by both parties to do something that's, you know, outside of what the expected was going to be. So we'll see how that plays out. As you mentioned, we're at a point where those discussions are a little more prevalent as team seasons end and, you know, expansion is now staring all of us right in the face.
Kelly, is it safe to say this year watching the first and second round of the NHL playoffs is much different for you this year? You're used to being in the Western Hockey League playoffs, but this year watching the first and second round of the playoffs, there's a chance that some of these players that you're watching are going to be members of the Golden Knights.
Yeah, and that's you know, really been part of it all year. I think what is really interesting with playoffs is it changes things. It gives some players the opportunity to elevate their play and take on a more important role in their on their team, because playoff hockey is different than regular season hockey. And the reverse of that, where a player maybe would have been in a position to be protected going into playoffs, and some things have happened over the course of their series, or plural, where that's not the case. So we're watching the playoffs very closely, as you would expect.
Now, Kelly, one of the things that you guys aren't just building an NHL team, but you also have to consider building an AHL team. How important is that, and how close are you guys to coming to some sort of resolution on that matter?
Well, the expansion draft is the first order of business, because that's where we select our team over the longer term. And if we become a championship team, it's going to be because we've done a great job not only in drafting, but also in developing players. So from that is where your American Hockey League affiliate becomes very important. And that'll be, hopefully something that we have buttoned down here shortly. We expect that we will have our own team that will control. And, as I touched on, we think it's going to be a real important part of our organization in terms of developing the young players that we draft.
Kelly, we'll let you go on this last question. It was 17 years ago, back in 2000, the last time the NHL expanded. That's when Columbus and Minnesota joined the league. In the course of building this franchise, in the course of building the Golden Knights, have you or George McPhee reached out to any of the individuals who were involved in the previous expansion efforts in the NHL to sort of pick their brain on what it's like to build a new team from the ground up? Now, it's obviously not exactly the same. The rules have changed and everything else, but how much consulting or discussion have you had with previous people in charge of building a team from ground up?
Yeah, we've actually done a fair bit of it. I won't get into specifics, but we've talked to people from a few expansion teams in the past, and you're right, there's many differences now, but in terms of establishing an identity, what you're trying to be coming out of the gate, how you build your organization, identifying those key traits that you want your team to have. We've had some real good discussions with some of the people that have ran teams in the past. And the one thing that's certainly more favorable for us than a lot of the expansions in the past is we're coming in alone. So the work that we've done this year, we're not at the end of the process going to be drafting with another expansion team to build our team. We're the only expansion team coming in. So that's much different than expansions, the last one that you referred to, which was Columbus and Minnesota. The other thing that's quite a bit different, there was no salary cap the last time there was expansion. There was, just the world in general. There was no social media. There was free agency, I believe, was 31 at that time. I think in that scenario, teams could protect two goaltenders. So there's a lot of differences, and yet it's been real valuable for us to have some real good discussions with some of the people that have led that process for those teams.
Kelly McCrimmon is the assistant general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights. Kelly, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for doing this. Best of luck, I guess, in the draft lottery tonight. Not that you can control that much. And with the upcoming expansion draft and everything else, I'm sure it's an exciting time for yourself and the entire Golden Knights franchise.
Well, it is, and thanks very much for having me.
Take care, Kelly. Thanks again.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll touch on the Senators-Rangers series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Best player on the Ottawa Senators gives them a Game 1 victory over the New York Rangers. Erik Karlsson scoring with 4:11 to play in the third period on Thursday night. bad angle goal, probably a shot you could take 100 times, aren't going to get that result. It deeks through three players off Lundqvist, you know, back of Lundqvist a little bit and in the net. But it only counts as a goal, and the Senators do have a 1-0 series lead over the Rangers. Game two goes this afternoon in our nation's capital. You know, we talked about it with Jonas Siegel in the first hour. Gord Wilson, the Ottawa Senators broadcaster, is going to join us in hour number three. But this really does sort of feel like the JV of the Eastern Conference semifinals, when, you know, the real matchup is between the Penguins and the Capitals.
Yeah, and nobody's going to argue that this series was as anticipated as the Penguins and the Capitals series, and for right reasons. We talked about it during the first hour, Drew. It's most likely that the team that wins that series is going to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. We'll see what happens. But when you talk about that game one between the Rangers and the Senators, it looked like it was going into overtime. It was a very even game, and Erik Karlsson continues to have an unbelievable playoffs. And heading into this series, that's what we were going to really watch, is with the fractures he had in his foot, was that going to be a factor in the series? Were the New York Rangers going to target that injury? Not to say that they were necessarily going to go up to him and slash him in the ankles like Bobby Clark did to Harlamov in the Summit series, but certainly it was out there that Karlsson was dealing with that injury, and we found out that Joe Thornton was dealing with more injuries than we normally thought that he would be dealing with the ACL and the MCL sprain, right? So this series, I think, even though it might not have the same fanfare as some of the other series, the Oilers, Ducks, and obviously the Penguins and the Capitals, I mean, you've got two teams here that are very evenly matched, very good in goal, and really the difference, I think, the New York Rangers, it was hard not to pick them in this series, but the Ottawa Senators, you look at this team, and they just have this never-quit attitude, Drew, and, you know, they're built from the goal out, and Guy Boucher has brought in that system, and they're playing that system really well, but this offense really does flow through Erik Karlsson. I think he's been the best defenseman in the playoffs so far. Alex Pietrangelo, for my money, has been up there as well, but it's unbelievable. It's almost like some of the moves and plays that he's making are magical.
Yeah, I mean, Erik Karlsson.
It was a fluke. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, it takes a bounce, a lucky bounce, and goes in. It was from a bad angle, but it was almost fitting that Karlsson scored that game-winning goal.
He has been phenomenal in the playoffs. I mean, they can't take anything away from him, even though it was, a quote-unquote fluky goal. I look at the series, and these are, as you said, Ezzie, these are two very evenly matched teams. Neither team has what I would call a game-breaking goal scorer in the likes of Ovechkin or Tarasenko or Crosby. They just have a lot of depth on the forward lines. You know, each team, you know, can run, you know, 9-4, the top three lines out there, you know, pretty evenly. They don't really care as that much. And each team has a fourth line that's, you know, a little bit lesser on the in the offensive threat side. They're two very evenly matched teams, two teams that both get very good goaltending, Lundqvist and Craig Anderson, who's been phenomenal this playoffs as well. So while we're not giving the series the credit it deserves, just because it seems like the JV series, I think it will still be an entertaining series, just how evenly matched these two teams are.
Yeah, and it's had a good flow, and I've been unexpectedly, you know, pleased by some of the flow of this game, and you know, I was anticipating, like you said, Drew, a letdown based on Pittsburgh and Washington, and you know, I mean that series has everything, so including like the big name matchups versus this one, you know. Having said that, Henrik Lundqvist has been very good. Both goalies, you know, were beaten by power play goals. Kreider was screening Anderson on that first one; he really didn't have a chance.
Yeah, and McDonough with the goal.
That's right, McDonough with the shot from the point, but Kreider had the screen in front. And then, you know, the Karlsson goal is just incredible, to be honest with you, just because, like, he's just got so much moxie. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's 4 minutes to go in the game, and in the third period of a tie game, and he's on the Rangers' goal line. And he you know, it just goes to show you how gifted he is offensively, that he can recognize an opportunity. He was already deep, but not that deep, and then went in further, recognizing that, I think it was Pajot, but was behind the net, got him the puck, took that shot. I don't know if it went off Stepan or not. It may have redirected off Stepan and then passed Lundqvist, because I don't, just from the angle, it's hard to see it beating because it was the way it shot in. I am pretty sure it hit Stepan and then went in. So, you know, I mean, that's a tough one on Lundqvist, but still, like, it actually, like I said, I was surprisingly entertained by the game. And again, we've talked about it numerous times, and we'll talk about it again Carlson's just spectacular. I mean, the fact is nobody generally reveals what they have, and they talked about why would he have revealed the injury, and it was like, because I guess they're so used to being out.
Lower body, upper body.
Exactly.
Your arm has literally been cut off,
exactly.
And you're saying it's a lower body injury.
And so he actually disclosed it, but again, the fact that he's playing through such an injury, as we talked about with Jonah Siegel, and still performing at this level is remarkable.
Yeah, you know, I look at it, you're absolutely right, it's remarkable. You know, certainly a lot of scoring opportunities in that first game between these two guys. I mean, the shots on goal in the first period alone, the Senators had 21 shots on goal in the first period of game one to the Rangers 12. So it's not like these two teams are holding back at all, because they both are, you know, they're both speed teams, they both have a ton of skill. They're not going to, you know, grind you into a pulp, you know, to speak of, but that's okay. It's been back and forth hockey in game one, and I do expect that it's going to be a lengthy series just because how evenly matched they are.
Yeah, and you know, the Kreider step on Zuccarello line was so good in that first round series against the Montreal Canadiens, as was Rick Nash, and Rick Nash was pretty quiet in that first game, but yeah, absolutely, Drew. I mean, the Ottawa Senators had 34 shots mm-hmm. after two periods, and I didn't think that the Rangers were generating enough offense in those first two periods, and then when they needed that goal towards the end of the game, they started to press a little bit. But again, it's not like Henrik Lundqvist was bad in this game one, right? It's just, it's a fluke goal that goes in off the stick of Erik Karlsson, and that prevents the game from going to overtime, right? And when you look at these two teams and how they played in the first round, the Ottawa Senators obviously were a bit of a surprise to win against the Boston Bruins, and that series was also evenly matched. There were some overtimes there. Mm-hmm. But you expect that to be the case for the rest of this series. And for me, someone else has to step up on the New York Rangers, whether that's a guy like Kevin Hayes or Jimmy Vesey or others, right? Because really, the Rangers don't have the same game breakers. Neither do the Ottawa Senators, for that matter. I mean, Bobby Ryan didn't have a very good regular season, and he stepped up in a big way in the first round against the Boston Bruins, right? So a lot of these games are going to be one-goal games, but I have a feeling that this series is going to surprise a lot of people because it's going to be so close, and it's most likely going to take probably six games to win the series. We'll see what happens. There's only been one game played, but I mean, there have been some surprises in the first round. Nobody really expected Chicago to go out in the first round against the Nashville Predators. We expected the Ducks and the Flames to go longer, and for example, the Blues and the Wild series, that turned out to be one of the more captivating series of the first round. So And I also think that the Ottawa Senators can no longer really play that underdog role, right?
Sure.
I mean, they've got the home ice advantage. Mm-hmm. The New York Rangers were a team that finished fourth in the Metropolitan Division. Not many people were expecting this team to go far. Not saying that nobody picked them to win the first round, but they weren't up there with the Capitals and the Penguins as far as Stanley Cup contenders. And so that you have that element that really these two teams are both going to be underdogs when it comes to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Sure, whoever gets through. But I mean, entering this series, I thought the Rangers were the better of the two teams entering this series. I know that the Rangers are fourth in the Metropolitan and were in the wild card spot, and the Senators were second in the Atlantic. But we also know that the Rangers, you know, in a normal season would never have been in a wild card spot. They just played in such a loaded division this year. I thought that I still think the Rangers are going to win this series. I think they're the better of the two teams, despite the fact that they don't have the home ice advantage.
I was going to say, the only problem is you can't squander opportunities. And Henrik Lundqvist was great. He kept them in the game. I mean, he made a save on Stone right point blank that I thought, I don't know how he stopped it. Mm-hmm. Made a beautiful save on Kyle Turris throughout the game. So, I mean, I think he stopped like 21 shots in that first period.
He did.
And he was really good. I think the last goal, the Carlson one, which amazingly was his first game-winning goal of his career in the playoffs. So that's kind of surprising with a guy like Erik Karlsson, who's played like almost 40 career playoff games. That was his first career playoff game-winning goal. But I just thought that Henrik Lundqvist played a really good game, and you know that they're obviously going to need that from him, but he can't score. So they need scoring from the guys like Kreider and Rick Nash and like Ezzie was talking about, VC and those types of players to step up and say, okay, you know, we've got our goalie making the saves. It's a one goal game. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't simply score one power play goal. You got to get some even strength opportunities.
Well, the Rangers need to get the power play going. That, you know, they are operating at a 10.5% on the power play. Two goals in 19 opportunities. The second, of course, was the goal in game one between the Senators. So they only had one goal on the power play in that first round series against the Habs. So the Rangers team definitely would like to see the power power play get going in this series against the Senators.
Yeah, and you heard a lot about, you know, the Rangers after the game needing to go to the net a little bit more, making it a little bit more difficult for Craig Anderson. And a guy like JT Miller was making it difficult for Carey Price in the first round. So was Chris Kreider. That's to be expected. So I think, you know, for the Rangers, they're not the most physical team, but, you know, you might have to go into those dirty areas because the way Craig Anderson has played in the playoffs for the most part, he's not allowing a lot of goals. So I think that's something to look at. This is going to be a much more desperate team in game two, and that's to be expected. You go down 2-0 back to MSG, you know, that's not what you want, right? So again, I mean, it's going to be a very even series, but I think the Rangers could be much better in game two.
Game two between the Rangers and the Senators, that's an afternoon game this today, 2 o'clock start in Winnipeg. When we come back, Paul Edmonds is going to join us. We'll talk about your Winnipeg Jets a little bit more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number three, coming up next on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend. You know him as the Winnipeg Jets play-by-play broadcaster here on TSN 1290. Paul Edmonds, welcome back to the program, and a happy spring to you, good sir.
Well, thank you very much. Shalom.
Shalom to you, too. Paul Edminski, of course, is what I meant to introduce you as. Paul, you know, we were talking a little bit about the Jets at the start of the show with the draft lottery coming up later on tonight. And, of course, we're not going to really preview that because it's a lottery and nobody knows how it's going to work out. But we're speculating that if the Jets maintain, you know, a draft spot similar to where we expect it to be, anywhere from 12 to 15, can you see this? Should this be the year that the Jets sort of put that first-round pick up on the trade block to see what they can get in return in immediate help?
Well, I guess, Drew, does that depend on whether you think they should move up or do they just maybe move back down a little further in the first round or maybe give up their pick to get something in return?
I'm speaking more about an asset in return, somebody that can, you know, maybe get a young player from a different team or somebody who can help the Jets in the here and now as opposed to a couple of years from now where, you know, Logan Stanley will be coming up, you know, 2-3 years from now, something like that.
Sure. So I guess the best scenario for them, if we're sort of going in sort of a hypothesis situation, is, okay, so what do they need? Well, they need a goaltender. And they need a left-shot defenseman. We've talked about that for the last couple of years, and they've tried to address a little bit of their depth with Logan Stanley there last year. So I think that if something certainly landed on Kevin Cheveldayoff's lap that way or with that respect, that you'd maybe look at moving that number one pick at 12 or 13, 14, or 15, as you suggested, if they fall down or fall backwards in the draft or the lottery tonight. But I do know that in listening to Kevin, certainly on H&L a little earlier this week, that he brought up a very interesting scenario. And there was a name by the name of Mark Scheifele that was thrown in there in sort of comparison. And that was that there's a lot of players, while we don't have the cachet or the stardom, say, of last year's draft and the players that are available in it this year, per se, once you get maybe past the first two picks, there are, according to Cheveldayoff, a number of picks that, or at least players, that in that sort of middle tier, if you will, as he called it, that are going to be real good players. And a lot of them, I think, could be interchangeable for where they go in the draft and what teams certainly value some players over others. It's not as black and white as it has been on this guy's number seven and that guy's a solid number eight. So, you know, I guess if you don't move up, there's always that tendency that you could move that pick to try to get somebody a little bit younger if it fits in to what you need. But just to maybe get a prospect that can play right now on the center ice side, I don't think it helps the Winnipeg Jets. So I think they would be willing to listen to something along those lines, as long as it fits into one of their needs. And I with all due respect and apologies to sound like Kevin Cheveldayoff here in a lot of respects, I do think that the Winnipeg Jets are open to a lot. But I guess we'll see what certainly happens and where the ping pong balls certainly fly out of the Farnsby there tonight. And then I think that will have a little bit of determining factor on how the Winnipeg Jets go about servicing their number one pick in the first round this year.
Paul, I think everyone agrees that the 2017 draft doesn't have an Austin Matthews or a Patrick Laine, but is it perhaps what's going to make this draft so exciting, the draft lottery, I should say, so exciting, is that there's a good chance that there's going to be a lot of these picks moved because you have the expansion draft coming up before the NHL draft?
Well, I think that certainly is something that's a lot different than we've experienced in the NHL returning to Winnipeg, and certainly in the NHL for the last couple of decades. I mean, they haven't expanded since, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but somewhere in around 98.
2000.
You know, so, I mean, those were a couple of teams in Columbus, and I think Nashville came in around that time. And so, you know, I think that there's a lot of things at play that that could be affected by the expansion draft, certainly with Las Vegas and how you go about protecting players, and whether you use this chip, your first-round selection or any of your picks, as a chip to say to, and pardon the pun, to Vegas, hey, listen, I'll give you this if you don't, we're going to expose this guy if you don't take him. And, of course, George McPhee is on record this week as saying that he would be open to that. And there's been pretty much conversations with, I think, at least, you know, half to three quarters of the National Hockey League's general managers with George in pursuant to something along those lines, or at least to kind of broach that subject on, okay, what are you interested in and what would you need back and those kinds of things. So, yeah, there will be that give and take, and there could be a tendency, I think, for a few more teams to be able to part with, say, a first-round pick in order to hold something that that they feel is a real good asset for their team right now, as opposed to what many of these players will be in the future, and that's probably still a couple, 3 years away.
Paul, a lot of folks are trying to figure out what Jets GM Kevin Cheveldayoff will do with their selections, whether they'll go 7-3-1 or if they'll go 8-1. And so the question I have is, do you think that he's likely to ask a player, perhaps a Tobias Enstrom, to waive a no-movement clause?
I think so. I do. I think that every conversation and every possible scenario that you could think of has been certainly discussed within the boardroom and via the lines of communication with Kevin and his scouting staff and in his administration. And that's probably been one that's been broached for sure. And whether they've done it, we don't know. Whether they're in the process of doing it, we don't know. But I think that would be something that would come up. Toby's got 1 year left, and there's a lot of speculation as to the fact that when he's done, he's probably going to honor his contract and go back to Sweden and finish his career there, if in fact he plays after the last year of his contract is done in Winnipeg. So I think that that's another one of those scenarios that, you know, hypothetically, you could say that this makes good sense. It would probably, in a business sense, be plausible for the Winnipeg Jets to ask and then hope that Toby certainly exposes himself and that you can kind of move from there to protect other assets that you like. That doesn't mean necessarily that if he waives his no trade contract or clause in his contract, that he will be picked by Las Vegas. I mean, Toby could still be a Winnipeg Jet for the final year of his contract next season. But I just think it allows the organization to have a few more options. And you know, really, there's nothing on Toby to do that. I mean, you know, he doesn't owe the Winnipeg Jets anything but another year of his services. But I think that there's been a pretty good relationship there, and I wouldn't be surprised if the ask has already been made and there's been some communication that way. And I guess we'll find out a little bit further into June when those expansion lists or those protected lists are revealed to the public.
But Paul, you know, you really do wonder how they can incentivize a player to try and remove something that's been negotiated. Not that they couldn't do it, but what would be the incentive, in my mind, to Toby Enstrom to say, okay, sure, I'm going to waive this and potentially go to an expansion team?
Well, that's interesting, David, because we're sort of always in a culture now of what's in it for me, right?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what's in it for Toby Enstrom? And I guess on the surface, not much, right? I mean, okay, great. You got an opportunity maybe to go to Vegas, or you got an opportunity to stay here. So, I mean, Toby might say, well, is this worth it for me to maybe have another year on my deal, or is there some sort of bonus I can get into? I guess those are all things that could be negotiated, and we may never find out if there's anything along those lines of incentive. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, what really is in it for Toby, other than maybe a little bit of loyalty to the Winnipeg Jets organization that he's been a part of ever since he was drafted and played his first National Hockey League game? So that might be something that comes into play here as well, that you have to sweeten the pot for the player and maybe the agent as well, and for Toby's camp, because as we know, I mean, there's always give and take on both sides when it comes to the players and when it comes to management.
The irony is, Paul, and we're joined by Paul Edmonds on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Paul, of course, being the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, is that when you talk about the weaknesses and the needs of the Jets, left side defense is certainly one of them. And Toby Enstrom has certainly had his struggles and maybe taken a step back from where he used to be in the course of his career. But all of a sudden, if he waives his no-move clause, and if Vegas drafts him, all of a sudden the Jets have not only just one hole on the left side of the defense, but I'd argue two gaping holes on the left side of the defense behind Josh Morrissey. And so it's sort of a catch-22 for the situation for the Winnipeg Jets as it pertains to Toby Enstrom.
Well, it certainly does, and it maybe makes you a little bit more aggressive with some of that money that you would have, and that's in around $5 million to maybe go out on the free agent market and procure somebody that way. It also maybe opens up a spot more permanently for, say, a Julian Melchiori. I don't know if that would be certainly in the number two hole behind Morrissey, but certainly a serviceable number three. So there's all kinds of options. Now, all it really does, though, guys, if you have no interest in signing Toby Enstrom past this last year of his contract, it just accelerates the fact that you might have to go and find somebody now in terms of your left side defensive depth. So, you know, it's just putting you 1 year ahead of what you would be forced to do next year anyway. So I think there's a contingency plan for that probably in place. I would be surprised if there wasn't, because as we know, being a general manager or a top executive administrator in the National Hockey League, or any sport for that matter, it's a chess game. You're always thinking at least two or three moves ahead.
You know, Paulie, for you watching the first round and early here in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, do you start thinking about, you know, when the Jets do get back into that first round of the playoffs, the possibilities when you see what Toronto did in the first round against Washington and what Nashville was able to do in the first round against Chicago?
Well, I also think about what's happened certainly in Edmonton and the turnaround there. And if you've watched the first two games of that series against the Ducks, Edmonton walks into Anaheim and wins both games. Now, of course, the Ducks had the pressure on last night, and they had 40 shots on Cam Talbot. They hit two posts near the end of the game as well. But it's been goaltending for me, and that's been the real difference for Edmonton. Cam Talbot's been better than John Gibson, purity. It's plain and simple. And I certainly think that if you got to the point where you got some more experience and a little bit more seasoning in that position for the Winnipeg Jets, who knows where they could carry themselves, certainly into a playoff round or two, because the proof is in the pudding with the Edmonton Oilers. Now, they went out and they added a few pieces and got some augmentation, certainly with a Lucic and with a Larson on defense. But that core group is still there. And I just watched the way Cam Talbot played last night, and he was very, very sharp and really held a playoff inexperienced team in. And now they're going back to Northern Alberta with a 2-0 series lead. So, you know, to your point, certainly with Nashville losing their first game of the playoffs last night to St. Louis, it's been goaltending there, and certainly the moves that they've made along the lines of getting a Ryan Johansson in the middle, certainly, and P.K. Subban, a certainly dynamic player on the back end, and then Toronto with all that youth that they have, and certainly Frederick Anderson coming in from Anaheim to backstop their goaltending needs there. So, for me, it really starts in the blue ice with these guys and the way they've been able to kind of move with the teams that you mentioned, Ezzy, and then certainly what's going on in Edmonton and the fact that they've got a stranglehold in that series going back. And, you know, they're two wins away from getting to the conference finals, and who would have predicted that?
And, you know, Paul, that's kind of a perfect point about the Winnipeg Jets and, you know, the goaltending and how important is this summer for Kevin Cheveldayoff and his group? Because the fact is that I don't know that fans are going to put up with any more kind of stalling for a team that has this much talent on it.
I agree, Dave. I certainly agree with you. I've talked about this before, and
I've had no indications from the NHL, or pardon me, from the National Hockey League team here that anything would be any different than the expectations go up within the fan, within the media. But certainly, I think first and foremost, from within the organization of the Winnipeg Jets, there is an expectation to not only get to the playoffs next year, but also maybe not make as much noise as we would like to see, say, Edmonton, but certainly win some games and battle through that first round and maybe get on to the second round for sure. I think the expectation climbs dramatically here. You're going from one summit of the mountain to another, and from certainly up in base camps, if you will, to try to get to the top as you work your way through as an organization. And this organization needs to take a step next year, and that's into the playoffs, and then certainly have a very competitive playoff round or two. Certainly, it was great 2 years ago to get in and see them play against the Ducks, but some of those games were tight. Some of them went to overtime. They didn't get a few breaks, didn't get a few bounces in an overtime game or two, coughed up a few leads. But I think the next step for them is not only the playoffs, but to win some games in that series. And they're not that far away, as we talked about and established here already. I think it's a position or two that needs to be refined or upgraded, and that certainly will put them in good stead to do that.
Paul Edmonds is the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290. He joins us from the Edmonds family compound in North Winnipeg.
By the way, Paulie, if you and Joel need someone to come on tonight with you guys to get that perspective from the couch, just let me know and I can come on with you guys.
Well, keep your phone line open, Ezzy. I mean, we've got Bayak coming on. He's being limoed over to a dinner date tonight, so... we'll have you from your couch and Bayak from his limo.
The irony is that Ezzy's actually Bayak's limo driver, so you know.
And I'm getting paid pretty well, too.
Yeah.
Then make sure you pull over and take the call, Ezzy.
He's actually running Goober is what Ezzy's doing. Ezzy's in charge of Goober in the city. Paul, thank you, buddy. We'll see you later on. 5:30.
Pleasure, guys.
5 or 5:30 tonight.
We're on at 6 o'clock tonight till 8.
6 till 8 tonight. Draft lottery coverage here on TSN 1290 with Paul Edmonds and Joel Marcoux. Paul Edmonds, thanks for doing this, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome, guys. Talk to you later.
When we come back, we're going to do some post-mortem from the first period. The Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Very upset. We have a great team in here. We had a great opportunity to do a lot this year, and it's, it definitely feels like a wasted opportunity, and this is some adversity that we have to deal with as a team and individually, and hopefully in the long run make this better.
Max Pacioretty of the Montreal Canadiens. It's a wasted opportunity for the Habs as they lose in the first round to the New York Rangers. The post-mortem of the Montreal Canadiens begins now here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. It's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. In fact, I sent an email to our friends at Keener Jerseys yesterday about getting some new jerseys for some of our new team members on the House of A, Dave.
There you go.
Someone
asked me the other day where they should go to get something customized. I referenced them to Keener Jerseys.
There you go. So it's a coming full circle, if you will. Something like that.
You seen the new Goldeyes jerseys?
I haven't.
Yeah, Keener Jerseys are doing the Goldeyes jerseys this year.
And
unbelievable. Look great.
Yeah.
Really? I'll have to check that
out.
The Angry Fish. That's Angry Fish Pilsner. Isn't that what they also serve there?
Yeah.
There you go.
Right. Our good friend Andrew Collier.
Yeah, taking a little Goldeyes action this summer.
Can't complain.
That beautiful night out at the...
And it's a phenomenal facility. It really is.
Oh, yeah. If you're looking for a great night out in this summer night or summer afternoon, kick up the feet,
coming back from having Paul Edmonds on the segment, it makes sense to talk some Gold Eyes baseball.
You pick up some peanuts. You bring your glove to the game. It's a fantastic summer night.
I don't know about bringing your glove to the game. Do you bring your glove to a baseball game typically at this stage in your life?
Drew, I think your face can answer that question when it got the 14th inning in Philadelphia.
Wasn't that the 17th inning?
It might have been the 17th.
I don't even remember what inning. That's true. I did get that ball in the face.
I mean, but, Hustler and Ezzy were gone by the 11th and Philly down.
Well, they were gone only because they stopped serving beer, and God forbid these guys go more than an inning without a beer at a baseball game. That'd be desperation time at the NHL draft in Philly a few years back.
I was actually thinking about cracking a beer right now.
An Angry Pilsner, which just miraculously showed up out of Ezzy's pants.
It comes full circle. Nobody would be the least bit surprised at all. You're eating Bannock, you're drinking beer. I'm not sure what the hell's going on.
Yeah, thanks to whoever left Bannock in our lunchroom here. It's delicious. Rory told me I should have put some jam on it, though.
Well, I'm sure there's still some left, so you could probably take care of that in the next segment.
I suspect there'll be some Bannock to go.
Yeah, exactly. As he doesn't pass up free food whatsoever.
I wonder if the Bannock lady brought it.
Let's talk about the Montreal Canadiens. So they lose in six games to the New York Rangers, and the phrase thrown around was wasted opportunity there in Montreal. You have Alex Radulov and Andre Markov, who are both unrestricted free agents, come July 1st. Alex Galchenyuk is a restricted free agent, still up in the air if he's a center or if he's a wing. Carey Price is eligible for a contract extension on July 1st. This is a key summer from my perspective of the Montreal Canadiens because all the moves they've made, Marc Bergevin was certainly very active the last offseason. He was very active at the trade deadline, and push comes to shove, they couldn't get the offense necessary. They tried, 2 years ago they were too soft, and then they became grittier with, and they go out and they get Andrew Shaw, and then this year they can't score. So it seems like it's always something in Montreal, and Carey Price isn't getting any younger.
Yeah, and they scored 11 goals in six games, Drew. Let's start off with Max Pacioretty and Alex Galchenyuk, right? We played the clip there at the top of the segment with Max Pacioretty. They didn't score a single goal in the series, and we talked about it heading into Game 6 on last weekend's show. I mean, that's just not going to cut it. You're talking about the captain of the team and a third overall pick in Alex Galchenyuk, right? And they needed to be better in that series. They needed to score more goals. Carey Price had a fantastic series, but they just didn't generate enough offense. You talked about the moves that the Habs made in the offseason, Drew. Alex Radulov had a great regular season, and he had a great first-round series against the Rangers. Shea Weber was fine for my money. And when you talk about this team and what they have coming up in front of them, Alex Radulov is most likely going to want a longer-term contract. And we'll see what happens there. A guy like Andre Markov is towards the end of his career. He's probably got, 1 or 2 years left. Mm-hmm. I actually thought he was pretty solid in that first round. But, I mean, let's be honest here. Three of those six games against the Rangers were one-goal games. And then the first game of that series, when the Rangers shut out the Habs, there was an empty net goal. So really, four of the six games were one-goal games. So they were in this series. But when you have so much invested in a win-now mentality, and you mentioned they made moves like getting Steve Ott and Dwight King and Jordy Benn at the trade deadline. Andreas Martinsson was another guy. He wasn't a factor in the series against the Rangers.
No.
But they made some moves with the intention of going far in the playoffs, right? And when you've got Carey Price in net, the best goaltender in the world, you always think that you can go far in the playoffs. And so this is probably the most disappointing first-round exit they've had in a long time, because this is a team that has so much potential, right? And for me, a guy like Galchenyuk just seems to not really rise to the occasion. Very good player, very skilled player. I like him. I'm a fan of his game. But he was not good in the first round of the playoffs, and neither was Pacioretty. And you just can't have your top two players not contributing offense. So for me, that was the big key in the series. And I realized that there are other factors in the series with the games being one-goal games, special teams, and a break here and a break there. And maybe that game goes to seven games, Drew. But I don't think you can really overstate the fact that Montreal's top players did not show up in round one.
Is it time to sort of give up on the idea of Alex Galchenyuk as a center and maybe just keep him on the wing and say, go be the best winger you can be?
Well, for Claude Julien, I mean, he obviously thought that he was better suited on the wing, right? Mm-hmm. And Alex Galchenyuk, we know, personally prefers center. And regardless of where he plays, though, I think he needs to round out his game. And he's still young, guys. It's not like, you know, Alex Galchenyuk is in his late 20s or anything like that. He's got a lot of room to grow, but there's a lot to be desired there from his game, because he was okay during the regular season, but he was just a non-factor in that series. And to me, he was the X factor for the Montreal Canadiens. I really thought he needed to step up, because Alex Radulov can't score all of your goals, right? He got a lot of big goals, especially earlier on in the series there. Yeah. But I mean, that remains to be seen whether he's going to be a winger or center long-term, Drew. But I don't know where this Montreal Canadiens team is going. Are they going to be a big player at the NHL draft as far as making moves? Because as you mentioned, there's uncertainty with how long Alex Radulov is going to be there. If Alex Radulov doesn't factor into the long-term plans, I could see the Montreal Canadiens in the market to acquire a forward. But I also think,
Even if Radulov signs a 4 or 5 year extension, I think he will. It's a flawed roster. It's not a roster that's good enough to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, unless Galchenyuk...
It's not even good enough to win a round.
Clearly. Unless Galchenyuk takes another step forward, unless Pacioretty takes another step forward, it's a flawed roster that Mark Bergevin has given to Claude Julien.
Well, the reality is, if you don't score goals, then you're not going to win the games. And the truth is, they scored 7 goals in the 2 games that they won, 4 and 3, and then they scored 4 goals in the 4 games that they lost, including being shut out. So the fact is that their forwards didn't step up. Defensively, like the goal, Carey Price played well. You have to score. When you have your captain not getting a goal in a series, well, you're probably not going to do too well. So the fact of the matter is that if Montreal wants to have success, I mean, and you know, it's got to be burning them right now that PK Subban, you know, who they felt the need to deal for some unknown reason, is having so much success there in Nashville versus, and I'm not blaming this on Shea Weber by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm just saying that it's got to grind the fans' gears in Montreal, La Belle Provence, to see that their beloved son, PK, is having so much success still in the playoffs.
I still don't think this team is good enough up the middle. You talked about Galchenyuk, Drew, but for me, Philip Deneau and Thomas Plekanec are your top two centers, and when you stack that up against the elite teams both in the East and the West,
there's no comparison.
It's not good enough. So for me, I mean, you're looking for your Ryan Johansson, right? The Nashville Predators made the decision to move Seth Jones to get that number one center that they've coveted for so long. And for me, that's probably the biggest weakness on this team. Sure, you've got a lot of depth up and down the lineup. It certainly wasn't there in the first round. Arturi Letkinen, I thought, had a good first round. And, you know, Andrew Shaw obviously was injured, so they weren't able to have him for the whole series. Brendan Gallagher wasn't as much of a factor as you'd like him to be. But again, it was Max Pacioretty and Alex Galchenyuk not having a good first round series against the New York Rangers, not scoring any goals, but They definitely have to beef up those forward lines.
Completely, and that's something that will be a priority in the offseason for Mark Bergevin. When we come back, Gord Wilson is the Ottawa Senators radio analyst on TSN 1200. He joins us next to talk about the Senators and the Rangers. Game 2 of that series goes this afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Trying to get a hold of Gord Wilson, Ottawa Senators analyst. We hope to bring him to you here on the program. Should make note that this segment of the show, brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you missed out on your opportunity to buy tickets for Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy, it's all sold out, unfortunately. They're, of course, from Super Troopers. They've been rocking the crowd at Rumors all week long, so they are sold out. But coming up at the end of May, another gentleman from the Super Troopers, a guy you guys met at the NHL draft last year in Buffalo, Trandrasekhar.
There you go.
Jay Trandrasekhar is going to be at Rumors. You know him from Super Troopers. He'll be at Rumors at the end of May, so you can get your tickets online, rumorscomedyclub.com. As you tweeted at him just last week, And he responded and said, yeah, I remember you guys. I was at the he goes to the NHL draft all the time.
Well, he was actually doing stand-up
right
in Buffalo, and Dave and I were sitting down at a bar across the street from Bottoms
Pizzeria,
Up.
Pizzeria, actually.
Ah.
Across the street from Vander Kane's favorite location in Buffalo there. But
Bottoms Up.
Saw Carter Chen tweeted out a picture with Steve Lemmy and Kevin Heffernan, and apparently they've just been hilarious since they started their shows at Rumors.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Gord Wilson. Gord is the Ottawa Senators color analyst on TSN 1200. The Senators and the Rangers Game 2 goes this afternoon in the nation's capital. Gord, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Well, good morning to you, fellas. Thank you for having me. An exciting game day here in the nation's capital.
Absolutely. We've been talking about this series throughout the course of our program this morning, and what we were saying is that though it might not get the hype and it might not get the attention of the Crosby and Ovechkin show that's happening in the nation's capital to the south of us, but you know, this is going to be a pretty entertaining series because on paper, and certainly in Game 1, these are two very evenly matched teams that sort of resemble one another with a lot of depth in their forward lines. They don't have that one sort of game-breaking goal scorer, and there's a lot of speed on display between these two teams.
Yeah, absolutely, and both teams like to boast that. I think Guy Boucher has done a pretty good job this year of creating line combinations where he has everybody feeling comfortable playing with whomever. And after a conversation I just had with the for our pregame show, I mentioned to him that I counted no fewer than 15 line combinations that we saw on Thursday's game. And we're probably expecting the same thing. He likes to mix and match, but it's all in an attempt to, I won't say out-depth the other team because there's no expression, but he certainly wants to take advantage of the healthiness of his hockey club and the depth that General Manager Pierre Dorion has provided. With that in mind, the same holds true with the New York Rangers. Going into this series, all the talk has been a four-line team, about them being a four-line team. The fact that they have at least one 20-goal scorer on each of their four lines makes them a pretty deep team. And they're hoping to take advantage of that today.
You know, Gord, watching that first round series against the Boston Bruins, one of the players that impressed me the most was Derek Brassard, one of the newer members of the Ottawa Senators. And I think you would agree he had a bit of a disappointing regular season offensively. Didn't get on the score sheet in Game 1 versus the New York Rangers, but he definitely had an impact on the game. Are you pleasantly surprised with the way he's played? He's got a lot of playoff experience previously with the New York Rangers.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised, to be very honest with you, because it was, I guess, for lack of a better term, a mediocre regular season for Derek in terms of point production, 14 goals, 39 points. I think they were anticipating that there would be more production. Certainly, you make up for it when you are producing at a point-per-game basis in postseason play, and that's what he did in round number one. He had a six-game point-scoring streak snapped the other night against the Rangers in Game 1 of this series, but he was still an extremely productive player, if not for picking up points, then certainly getting pucks to the net. He led the team with five shots on goal. He had another three pucks pushed toward the net. He was a force and somebody that the Rangers did have to pay very close attention to. So that's all part of the depth, and that's all part of sort of a nickname that Derek came into the Senators with in the offseason. I know he was called at one point Big Game Brass, and obviously he has saved his best for postseason play. He seems to be that much more comfortable. The fact that Clark MacArthur is back with the team, and he played, I think, two or three games down the stretch at the end of the regular season with Derek, and he's been a line mate of Brassard's now for much of these playoffs. That's been a huge help to Derek as well.
Gord, you know, we continue to be amazed by the play of Erik Karlsson, especially when, in light of the circumstances of his injury that was revealed between the first and second round. Just how impressive has he been live and in person for you?
Outstanding. It's been more than impressive. It's been, I don't even know what more than impressive is. Does anybody have a word for more than impressive?
Erik Karlsson.
Erik Karlsson, yeah. He never ceases to amaze, let's put it that way. I mean, the goal that he scored the other night, the game winner from a foot and a half below the goal line, should come as a surprise, but to those of us who have seen him play every game, It really didn't. He does different things, and more often than not, his different things usually lead to success. They're out of the norm. Boy, he scored a goal. Of the 17 that he scored this year for the Ottawa Senators, the most impressive might have been an empty net goal early this season, and you're thinking, oh, well, empty net. But he blocked a shot. He had to outrace and outmuscle two players, hooked, held, everything else, and he was going at warp speed to put the puck into an empty net. And I know it's an easy finish, but just getting to the finish was incredible. And I said immediately afterwards, that's the nicest empty net goal you will ever see, and it comes from Erik Karlsson. He sort of just adds different things to his repertoire. So while they look unexpected, they shouldn't be, because it's Karlsson. He just does things differently, and there's a reason why he's won two Norris trophies and in line for a potential third this season, and certainly you know, through, and I know it's a very small sample size here because we're not halfway through the postseason, but I'm wrong in doing this, but Conn Smythe has been mentioned certainly when talking about Erik Karlsson in the early stages of these playoffs.
Gord Wilson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gord is the color analyst for the Ottawa Senators on our sister station, TSN 1200. Gord, you know, the Ottawa Senators certainly, you know, Clark MacArthur gets the game-winning goal in overtime in the first round. Craig Anderson has been phenomenal in these playoffs. Is this sort of the team of inspiration, you know, in the course of these playoffs? If you need a team, to, you know, if you're a casual fan, you need a team that you want to root for in the storylines. And, you know, we know about Craig Anderson and his wife's struggle or battle with cancer and Clark MacArthur coming back, having missed two seasons with concussions. Is this the team for casual fans to sort of get behind?
You would think so. If you're a fan of that kind of thing, the narrative has changed almost on a monthly basis here in the nation's capital with the Senators, either from the Craig Anderson family story to Clark MacArthur and his triumphant return. There are a few other things that have gone on sort of behind the scenes. Mark Methot nearly losing a finger with nine games left in regular season play and missing the tail end. There are a number of different things that have gone on with the hockey club that have obviously galvanized this team to the point where, as Guy Boucher likes to say, created a soul on the hockey club. And they are all in, as the slogan says, but in it with each for each other, I think, more than anything else. And it's been interesting to watch. It's been a lot of fun to be a part of, but at the same time, you certainly don't want to go through what Craig Anderson is going through or have to watch what he's going through and what Clark MacArthur is going through. The Bill Masterton Trophy is maybe an underrated trophy in the NHL, one that is highly regarded, though, by those who have won it. And obviously, there are two candidates here in Ottawa. Craig Anderson is a finalist for it, but you could very much argue that Clark MacArthur could be as well. So lots of galvanizing things that have happened to the hockey club, and they have persevered and managed to get to where they are in spite or despite some of the hurdles that they've and major hurdles that they've had to get across.
Gord, due to injuries, the Ottawa Senators have had to go with a couple of rookie defensemen, Frederik Claesson and Ben Harper, both in their first years in the NHL. Well, Frederik Claesson actually played 16 games last year. Ben Harper's played 5 of the 7 games. Not the easiest position for a couple of rookie defensemen to be in.
No, not at all. Frederik Claesson is a young Swedish defenseman that played 33 games for the Senators this season, and there was a point early on where the club just said, you know what, you're good enough to play at the NHL level, so you're going to stick around here. And even though he played 33 games, he's an extremely popular player and plays well in certain stretches. Like, he'll go 5 or 6 games and play exceptional hockey. He'll have an odd stretch where his play will drop off a bit and he needs to come out of the lineup. It happens frequently to an awful lot of young players. He's going to stay in the lineup here tonight. He's in the lineup this afternoon, essentially because Mark Borowiecki is out, missing his 6th straight game with a lower body injury. It's a tough loss for Ottawa. Mark likes to set the tone. The Senators have a system designed to be very physical, and physical play involving their left side defensemen, either Mathot or Dion Phaneuf or Mark Borowiecki, who led the league in hits this year. His loss is a tough one, and unfortunately he's going to miss again this afternoon's game. But as you said, they've had players fill in and done a very admirable job in doing so. Ben Harper on the other side is taking the place of a more experienced defenseman in Chris Weidman, who's really in his first full NHL season at the age of 27, played the entire year with the Senators, but his game dropped off a little bit in the series against Boston. Ben Harper has come in. He was arguably Ottawa's best defenseman in Binghamton of the American Hockey League this year, and he's not missed a beat. He's been, the word to use to describe him has been very poised, and we've not seen any flinch yet from the 22-year-old.
Gord, one storyline that got some play was the availability of tickets for game one of this series. And you know, it was hard to tell from watching it at home, you know, on the television, because it seemed like the crowd was really into it. But were you a little bit surprised that there were empty seats at the building?
Yeah, I have to be very honest with you, and I'm an Ottawa native. I didn't pay too much attention to it. We're a government town, as everybody across the country knows, and unfortunately, and I'm not sure how many people actually know this, but there's been a government payroll problem for over a year now in the nation's capital. And there are a lot of government employees who have had their pay messed up. And it's been a real, I can't speak from experience, but I'm going to guess a very big struggle for some families. And by some, I'm referring to probably thousands of people who have had uncertain pay periods. It's been tough. And so that, I think, has had a factor and a greater factor on the attendance here at Canadian Tire Centre than maybe any other. The fact that they're in round two here now, and it's an afternoon game today, I fully expect to sell out. But again, it's it may be too hard to predict. I certainly expected to sell out in game one, too.
Well, the Phoenix Coyotes are a problem for the NHL, and the Phoenix pay system is a problem for government employees in the nation's capital. Gord Wilson is the Ottawa Senators color analyst on our sister station, TSN 1200. Gord, appreciate your time. Have a great call of Game 2 this afternoon.
Thank you, fellas. Thanks for having me. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a lot, Gord.
When we come back, we got one final segment. What are we going to do in that final segment, gentlemen? We'll talk about Nikita Kucherov's comments about his Lightning teammates. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1200, 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Remember, we got draft lottery coverage coming up later tonight. That's with Paul Edmonds and Joel Marcoux. And, of course, we got the Jays and the Rays, in case you haven't enjoyed enough watching the Jays blow leads throughout the course of this entire week. They have another opportunity to do so, assuming they get a lead against the Tampa Bay Rays. That's coming up next, right after us here on TSN 1290. Spend the last segment talking about Nikita Kucherov's comments. Some bold comments, I would suggest, from the Russian player for the Tampa Bay Lightning. In speaking to the Russian news outlet, he said the following, quote, "Some guys overstayed on the team. They've got their money and they stopped working. They knew there was no competition for their positions and the organization is not going to take someone else. They played not really well this year. You can see it in their stats and the way they played. When we played together and I made a pass, they even were not expecting this. That's why this season was so hard for me, despite my good stats." You know, Nikita Kucherov, as a media member, I appreciate his honesty. But it is sort of surprising to hear a player speak that honestly and sort of draw a brush over his entire group of teammates with comments of that nature there is.
Yeah, and he's definitely disappointed, Drew, that the Lightning didn't make the playoffs, right? Not only were most predicting that the Lightning would make the playoffs, some had them going all the way to the Stanley Cup final and even winning it, right? Sure. So, I mean, Nikita Kucherov had a fantastic season He was over a point per game the last 40 games of the year, finishes with 40 goals and 85 points, and you watch him on a nightly basis, and he's just as important as Mark Scheifele or Blake Wheeler or Patrick Laine is to Winnipeg, right? He's that good, and we saw how good he was when the Lightning went to the Stanley Cup final a couple years ago, right? So, I mean, it's, as you mentioned, you know, you don't hear players speak that critically very often, but, you know, this Lightning team, in addition to not having Steven Stamkos for the entire year, you had a lot of disappointing performances, whether that's an Alex Killorn or a Tyler Johnson. And I realize Tyler Johnson missed some games, but, I mean, these guys were not good enough down the stretch. And oftentimes they were very dependent on Nikita Kucherov and Victor Hedman's offense. Jonathan Drouin, I thought, had a very good year, and he's really turned his career on here early in his career. But, I mean, again, I think Alex Killorn is probably one of the guys he might be talking about there, and he's a guy that might not be back with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I really like Killorn's game. We don't know exactly who he's talking about. He's really addressing the entire team, Drew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was in a Russian newspaper, so we had to read this translated. But certainly when you talk about where they're going, and at the trade deadline, I thought Steve Yzerman did a masterful job unloading some of those contracts. Ben Bishop was one of them, right? So we know Andre Vasilevsky is the future there in net, but they've got some big decisions to make with some of their pending RFAs.
Well, it was interesting after the comments.
UFAs too.
Yeah, UFAs too. Bob McKenzie said that he wouldn't be shocked if Drouin was traded this offseason. Now, that's probably more of a function of salary cap issues than it is anything else. But, I mean, even though they seem to have recovered from their contract dispute, and when he left the team for a while and he had a decent year in Tampa Bay, you hear a name, Jonathan Drouin, being on the marketplace. Well, I mean, you've seen flashes of the talent he brings to the table.
Yes. Well, to me, I mean, you're building your team around Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Drouin. So if I'm Steve Yzerman, I'm not trading.
More than Nikita Kucherov?
Well, sorry, and Nikita Kucherov, okay. Obviously. For me, I mean, you're looking at Tyler Johnson, you're looking at Andre Palat, who are both RFAs. And I mean, they're going to get significant raises. They were making $3.3 million a year. So when you're talking about those two players, I think it's likely that either one or two of those players are not coming back, right, Drew? So for me, I don't know if I would trade Drouin. You could get a lot for Drouin, considering that he's much younger than both Johnson and Palat. Not much younger, but younger. Mm-hmm. He's only 22 years old. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do. I mean, they're kind of in a similar position to Chicago or L.A., being right up against the salary cap. Not all of these guys are coming back next year. That's clear. It just really depends who they value more in the organization.
Kucherov also had some complaints about the way the lines were deployed in the course of the season, sort of that John Cooper was always using the line blender throughout the season. You know, does he have some fair comments to make? I mean, John Cooper's sort of a polarizing coach. A lot of respect behind him, but he does seem to also sort of rub some people the wrong way.
I'm always hesitant when there's a language and translation that you don't know what's being said. And again, the other thing also is the intent of the words, right? Because he may say something in Russian that to translate it into English misinterprets the general meaning behind what he's saying. So if we're taking what he's saying based on the translation, yeah, it doesn't sound good. But my only concern with that is that...
Yeah, we didn't see the rest of the article.
Yeah, and
so we don't speak Russian on top of it.
Well, no, and that's my problem. Well, I speak a little bit, but and they're only bad words. But the point is, I'm always very hesitant to take this stuff at face value because there is that language barrier and there is that change. So, yeah, it sounds scandalous to be talking the way he is, but again, he's speaking in Russian to a Russian media source. Now, I'm not saying it gives him carte blanche to say negative things and then not get exposed for it. But my only concern is because of the translation, you know, A, his original intent may be lost, and B, we don't know how easily that his words in Russian get translated to English. So again, am I surprised by the candor? Yeah, to a certain degree. But again, I just caution that his words could easily be misinterpreted. So if someone who's Russian-speaking was on the program and was telling us that was the intent, then I'd be more inclined to be like, okay, fine, that's great. Right now it just sounds kind of salacious.
Do you think there's some frustration with his contract as well? He signed a 3-year contract extension in the offseason worth $14.3 million. He's certainly being under paid based on his production this year with 85 points. Now, you can say that's not, you know, he should have held out for more of a, for a better contract or something. He was an RFA, didn't have a lot of leverage. But do you think there's some frustration with his contract sort of seeping in there as well?
Yeah, there might be, Drew. $4.7 million is an absolute steal for Nikita Kucherov. You could argue that he should be making $7 or $8 million a year as a top 10 scorer in the NHL. You know, Drew,
He'll get that once he hits, you know, in his next contract, he'll be a $7, $8, $9 million a year guy.
And I know we don't have a lot of time here, but when you look at the Lightning and the decisions that Steve Yzerman has to make, you know, is he going to bring back Tyler Johnson? Is he going to bring back Alex Killorn? Is he possibly going to move Jonathan Drouin? The Lightning do have a lot of talented players in the system. You look at Braden Point, he had a really good rookie year, former member of the Moose Jaw Warriors, and Boris Kachuk is playing in the American Hockey League right now. He was drafted in 2016. He's another top prospect in their system. So they do have other guys that are ready to step in to increased roles in the NHL. So
don't you find it interesting, Az, that there always seems to be a little bit of upheaval in and around that Lightning organization? In and around the players on the ice, and you know, there's always seems to be a little more drama there now than you might expect compared to some other teams in the league.
Yeah, it's possible, and a lot of that has to do with the Jonathan Drouin situation, right? And and a lot of that has to do with the Steven Stamkos situation. And, you know, I thought there was always a chance that Steven Stamkos was going to play in Tampa Bay, stay in Tampa Bay. A lot of people had him going to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but, I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, they've had some really good teams, and they're going to have trouble keeping most of this team together. We know that they're going to lose some players. It really just comes down to who are they going to lose. For me, I think you keep Jonathan Drouin.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine Winnipeg businesses because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We remind you, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. In case you missed any of this program, it's available for download on IllegalCurve.com. You can also subscribe via iTunes to get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball.